Should believers respond to civil law in the same way that they respond to religious law? We're starting a new series on Good Word, on Christ and His Law. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and a biologian, Joe Galusha, Professor of Biology at WWU. So let's turn to the question that I just asked. Should believers respond to civil law in the same way that they respond to religious law?
Well, I would like to respond with a question, Alden, and ask, what do you mean by religious law? Civil law I'm pretty clear about, but what do you mean by religious law?
That you do for religious reasons?
Well, there's many different gradations of those laws, though.
Okay. So. And that's part of what we need to talk about today, because in the official study guide, they talk about Roman law, Mosaic law of the civil kind, Mosaic law, ceremonial, rabbinic law, and moral law. But I want to focus, first of all, on the basic question of law. As human beings, do we respond more precisely, more passionately to what kinds of laws?
Well, I guess I don't think of most humanly made laws as being infallible. I think they are our best articulations of certain principles and ideas that we should abide by. But I don't think laws should simply be followed blindly. I think that there needs to be some thought as to the purpose for which the law was written. And if keeping that law fulfills that purpose, I think it's far more binding.
Isn't that the same with God's laws too? Aren't there some laws that should be applied in one way?
Oh, yeah.
Some in another way?
Yeah, because, you know, the fact that we wrote down one of God's laws doesn't mean that we have completely articulated it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm not here suggesting that we become antinomians or rebels. I'm suggesting that we recognize that even laws made with very good intentions may at some times be surrounded by circumstances which renders their keeping to be a contravening of the purpose for which it was established.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too complicated an answer?
I don't know. Joe, what do you think?
Simpler.
Simpler.
Simpler. My sense is that there are certain civil laws that are far more important to attend to than others. Every now and then I notice my speedometer has slipped ahead of where I intended.
Slipped ahead.
And
on its own, right?
I don't understand it. The cruise control's on sometimes. My point is simply that I don't have the same guilt or feeling of discomfort when it's just a bit over that I think I would if there were intentional breaking of more significant civil laws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you would say that there are gradations of importance.
I think that is true.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. Now,
and you mentioned the moral law. I would place that way higher than speed limit law, for example, or stuff like that.
But let me press that question. If I am a devout Christian who believes in God, isn't it a moral obligation to obey the laws of the land in which I live?
I think the answer is yes, it is. We have a moral obligation to do so where they don't contravene our understanding of the law of God. So I think that we cooperate in the speed limit almost all the time, and the payment of our taxes accurately. Isn't that coming this time of season? I think that it's very important to follow the laws of the land unless there is some immediate difference with the moral law.
Yeah, but I also think a lot of civil laws are made just so that you can have a sense of civilized interaction between human beings.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have a speed limit law, or that we have stop signs, or that we have taxes to be paid, those enable a civilized society to interact in meaningful and consistent ways. And I think that one of the things that has made European culture very stable over time has been a very high regard for the law, that even the king should there be such a person, cannot just arbitrarily adjust law. There has to be a process by which it happens. So, you know, I think any time you break a law, even the speed limit law, you are, in a sense, corroding the agreement for civilized society. But I think the effects of it are going to be different than if you break the moral law.
But my own response to breaking the speeding law momentarily, I think, is different. I don't pull the car over, stop, get on my knees, and invoke Christ's blood. I think of these as guidelines for safe living.
But, yeah. Joe, let me press that point. Suppose you were going faster than you should be, and a little child darts out in front of you, and you kill the child with your car. Shouldn't you then get down on your knees?
Clearly, I would. I absolutely agree that there are times when things happen. The interesting thing is I would feel very, very sad, no matter what my speed limit was, the result of injuring or killing a child. I think that it would be even worse if there were some kind of intentional part to that accident.
Yeah. Well, I think of a few years ago, it was a very foggy night here in College Place, and one of our men who worked at our computer department went out, and it was very foggy. He was driving very slowly, but an elderly woman stepped out in front of him. He didn't see her, couldn't see her, and she was killed. Now, there was no culpability on his part, but still, that was a tragic accident. Now, let me come back to another verse, which happens to be the memory verse for today's lesson. It's a very intriguing one for this particular lesson. For when the Gentiles, who do not have the law, do instinctively the things of the law, these, not having the law, are a law to themselves. Now, is the moral law something that's written into us? Romans 2:14 suggests that it may be. They don't have the explicit law.
I would think that there is a moral default in all human beings.
Help me with default, Dave.
Well, we have a sense of ought and ought not. There's a sense of conscience in all human beings. And I think it goes deeper than the laws that your culture happens to create, because we actually have laws across cultures that are very different, sometimes nearly opposite, but the sense of ought or ought not is still present. And, you know, I tried this experiment one day when I was teaching a class. I arranged with a student that he would allow me to mistreat him in public. And so, you know, as the class was going on, I suddenly stopped and I said, "You in the front row, I don't like you here, go to the back." I just treated him very arbitrarily, and he fussed a little bit, and I just became very strident and said, "Look, I mean now, go to the..." Well, the class was stunned in silence, you know, and then I just went on teaching. And it was funny that there was no point in teaching anymore, because the sense of justice and injustice of that whole class had been
violated.
Yeah. And about 2 minutes later, I stopped and said, "Okay, people, I was just trying to make a point. This was a setup, you know," and there was a great sigh of relief. But I was trying to prove the fact that you know, C.S. Lewis plays on that in Mere Christianity. He points out how in every culture there's this sense of justice and injustice, which I would call a default mechanism in human experience.
But, you know, that sentence of rightness and wrongness often has to do with how we relate to authority, and that becomes crucial for all of our discussions in the next few weeks. My colleague John Brunt told about holding a he was teaching a master's class in a Hispanic culture, and he was giving regular quizzes, and they were doing quite well. One day he walked into class, and instead of them all getting around 90%, there was one question where about half of them had missed it. Well, in North America, if a teacher writes a bad question, it's appropriate to say, "Bad question, we'll toss it out." And so John did that. But the next day, three students came to the translator and said, "Please tell our teacher never to do that again, because he will undermine the authority of the teacher." So it's very difficult to know how authority relates. And if you're in a culture that expects authorities to be held accountable, it'll really be quite different. But now, let's take a look here. We don't have a lot of time to explore this, but in the official lesson, they talk about the different laws that Jesus faced. It was a Roman colony, so obligated to obey the Roman law. But then it talks about the civic laws of Moses and the ceremonial laws. Is that a valid distinction?
I would suppose so, you know, because the ceremonial ones had religious significance. I'm not sure the civil ones did.
But you'd get death penalty anyway.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're the Old Testament prof, so you should answer your own question, Mr. Thompson.
Well, the point that I want to make, that if you're in a deeply rooted authoritarian culture like the Old Testament, there is no distinction and very little by way of hierarchy of values. See, when we come to the New Testament, Jesus' two great commands, first command, second command, that clearly moves us towards a hierarchy. But in the Old Testament, all laws are of equal value.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no distinction between the civil laws and the ceremonial or religious ones. They're just all lumped together. Now, I think the distinction is a valid one, but for ancient Israel, I don't think that they necessarily saw that, nor did they need to see
it. I know. I think there's still cultures like that.
Probably would be.
There's still mm-hmm. cultures like that.
Are they in the New World? Or?
No. They're in the Old World.
Because I think it's a very, very challenging place to live if one's religious or ceremonially religious laws and civic laws are somehow mixed and blended, because it is very difficult to sort out those that are first or higher from those that are next, and soon individuals in that mm-hmm. culture mm-hmm. could probably take some relatively insignificant ones, elevate them.
Well, I think that's true. I think there's some tribal cultures where there's no distinction made here. There are a lot of taboos, and you don't break a taboo. And if you do, you're
serious
not.
Consequences.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to the two different categories of Mosaic law, according to the lesson, then they have rabbinic laws. Now, we will talk about that later. Traditions, see, rabbinic laws. And then we come to the last one is moral law. And my suspicion is that when it comes to moral law, most of us would think about the Ten Commandments. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
I fully agree. I think that is the best statement of the moral law.
Yeah. Mm. And the interesting thing about the Ten Commandments as a statement of the moral law is that there are no penalties attached. Every single one of the Ten Commandments has a death penalty patch, except the last one. But the Ten Commandments have an enduring value, and we need to keep that in mind. Well, our time is running out. I want us to point out that I think my conviction is that Christians have an obligation to obey laws, period. And how we do that before God is an interesting question. So I want to thank you for listening in today, and I want to thank my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Joe Galusha, and my thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, for helping us out. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.